At noon, Rhea telephoned Marilyn. "Nothing wrong, is there?" Marilyn's voice sounded anxious. "No, I just wanted to check that it's still all on track at your end, that's all. I'm sorry, is it too early? I thought you might be up."
"No, no, that's fine. I've just had a swim. This is a good time for me. So you're making all your plans?"
"Yes, yes, I am indeed." Rhea's voice sounded very down.
"Nothing's changed, has it?"
"No, it's just something not connected. I saw the woman my husband is leaving me for today. She's just a child. It was a bit of a shock, you see."
"I'm so sorry."
"Thank you. I wanted to tell someone."
"I can understand that."
Rhea's eyes filled with tears. It was as if this woman genuinely understood. She must reassure her that she wasn't going to be an emotional drain on her. "I'm not cracking up or anything," Rhea began. "I don't want you to get that impression. I just wanted to reassure myself that it's all going to happen, this business of going to Westville. You know, I wanted something to hang on to."
"Sure it's going to happen," Marilyn said. "Because if it doesn't, then I'm going to crack up also. I've had the most awful telephone conversation with my husband, such coldness and bitter things we said. And I don't want to tell anyone about it here because they'd pat me down and say it didn't matter, but it did."
"Of course it did. How did it end?"
"He hung up."
"And you couldn't call him back because it would only be more of the same?"
"Precisely," Marilyn said.
There was a silence between them. Neither of them offered a consolation. "What kind of a day are you going to have?" Rhea asked.
"A busy one. I'm filling up every moment of time. It may not be healthy, but it's all I can do. And you?"
"Almost exactly the same. No point in sitting down to have a rest, taking it easy, as they all say. The pictures keep coming back to your mind if you start taking things easy, I find."
"Yeah, I find that's exactly what they do," Marilyn agreed.
There was no more to say. They said goodbye easily, like old friends who have shorthand between them. Rhea made good her promise to have a busy day. She'd clean out cupboards first. It was an ideal opportunity for some hard physical work. Now that a stranger was coming to live in her house, all those long-promised clearances would be made. Most of Danny's things were gone already, but she'd get the last lot out now. There'd be no sentimental pausing to remember when times were better. It would be as if she were part of a removals business. She began with the big airing cupboard in the bathroom. There were still some of his pyjamas, socks, and old T-shirts.
She wasn't going to look after them. Let Bernadette find the space for them now.
All were neatly folded and placed in one of the specially bought carrier bags with handles. Danny couldn't say she'd flung them into a garbage bag. They were as carefully arranged as if he were taking them on a vacation. She included old sports towels of his, a winter dressing gown, a shabby tracksuit, and some very out-of-date swimming trunks. He wouldn't thank her for these things, but still he couldn't fault her. Then she telephoned her mother and asked her to come for lunch.
"Have you got over this nonsensical idea of emigrating to the USA?
Nora Johnson asked. 2 months' holiday, ma'am. A rest, a change, it's exactly what I need. Do me all the good in the world.
Well, it certainly cheered you up a bit, her mother admitted unwillingly.
Come up to me, ma'am. I need your help. I'm sorting out the kitchen cupboards. It needs to."
"You're mad, Rhea. You know that. Clinically mad. Imagine tidying the kitchen cupboards at a time like this."
"Well, what would you prefer? That I get Danny arrested for not loving me anymore? That I lie on a long sofa and weep?"
"No."
"All right. I'll make us a great energy-giving soup, and we'll have it as a reward after an hour and a half's work." Rhea was killing two birds with one stone. Her mother would need explanations and reassurance that this wasn't a mad endeavour. What better time to do it than when they were sorting out her kitchen? She was utterly exhausted when it was over, but at least her mother was placated, reassured of the sanity of the enterprise, cordially invited to come out and visit Westville, and also had helped in the clearing out of the kitchen cupboards. But still Rhea wouldn't stop. She wanted to wear herself out. She didn't want to lie wakeful in that big lonely bed tonight and think of Danny and that child asleep in Bantry Court. She wanted to fall straight into a weary sleep the moment she got there. So, after her mother had left,
Rhea called Gertie. She was another who needed a one-to-one explanation of what Rhea was doing. Better by far to do it while they were working. Gertie, I know I sound like the diary of a mad housewife, but I don't suppose that if you could get away you could give me 2 hours this afternoon. It'd be such a help. I need to polish all the silver, wrap it up and put it into the bank. Marilyn doesn't want the responsibility of having it around when she comes, and anyway, I suppose I'll have to divide it with Danny later, so it's no harm that it's all put away. Oh, I'd love to, because I want to talk to you about something else, and it's fairly quiet here just now. I could come up now, straight away.
Oh, great. And listen, Gertie, I can give you 20 quid. It's worth that to me, honestly.
You don't have to. No, this is a professional agreement. You're doing me a service. Gertie came, pale as ever, eyes darting anxiously round her.
There's nobody here, is there?
No one but me.
You know what I wanted to tell you. This place you're going to, I looked it up on the map. It's only about 30 miles away from where Sheila lives.
Sheila? Your sister? Isn't that marvellous? Rhea was delighted. I'll be able to see her.
Gertie wasn't so pleased.
You'd never tell her, would you, Rhea? You'd never let anything slip.
About what?
About me and Jack, you know, about the situation.
Gertie's eyes were haunted looking. Rhea felt such a wave of pity for her friend that she could hardly speak.
Of course I wouldn't, Gertie. You know that. It's just that you being out there on your own and a bit low and everything after all you've been through, you know the way people confide.
No, Gertie, I wouldn't confide, believe me.
It's hard to say this, Rhea, but you see, it sort of keeps me going that Sheila envies me. Nobody else does. It's nice to hold on to the fact that my smart sister who went out to the United States thinks that I have a great life back here. Handsome husband, terrific family, great friends and all.
But in many ways you do have all that, Gertie, Rhea said,
and was rewarded by the old smile. The smile Gertie used to have when she worked in Polly's.
I do, she said. You're quite right, I do have all that, depending on how you look at it.
Together they polished the silver and kept off topics that would hurt either of them. When it was done, Rhea handed over an envelope.
Oh, I hate taking this because I've enjoyed it so much. This is a lovely, happy house. That man is so stupid. What can he get from her that he can't have here?
Another crack at being young, I think, Rhea said. That's all I can make of it.
You're tired, Rhea. Aren't you going to have a lie down before the children come home?
No, I'm not tired. And anyway, they're with their father this evening.
Is he taking them to Quentin's again, I wonder?
No, he's taking them to meet their new stepmother, as it happens, Rhea said in a dangerously calm voice.
She'll never be that, mark my words. That'll all be blown over long before there's any question of marriage, divorce referendum or no divorce referendum.
That doesn't help any, Gertie, really it doesn't, Rhea pleaded.
It wasn't meant to help. It's just a fact. It's what's going to happen. Polly met her, apparently. She says she gives it 3 months.
Rhea hated the thought of Polly talking about her, but not nearly as much as she hated the thought of Barney and Polly having met Bernadette socially.
Probably many times. As a foursome?
It made Rhea want to do some very hard work indeed, until her brain stopped functioning. She wondered would she scrub the kitchen floor when Gertie went, or was that going over the top entirely? As a compromise, she went into the front room and sat at the circular table looking around. What would the American woman make of this old-fashioned room? Her place seemed to be so modern and open-plan. She'd possibly consider this a fusty, silly room with its heavy-framed pictures and the over-formal sideboard. But these pieces had been bought with love and care at auction rooms over the years. She remembered each of them being eased through the doors. They were polished regularly by Gertie when she came to earn Jack's extra drinking money. Surely Marilyn would like them and feel happy in this room. Rhea opened the drawers of the sideboard. It would be interesting to know what they should contain. Possibly this was the place for table napkins, corkscrews, salad servers. But then, since they had their meals in the kitchen, what was the point of stacking things you needed where you didn't eat? Rhea wondered what the drawers actually did contain. The answer was, in fact, everything that had no place there. There were children's drawings, a broken watch, pencils, an old calendar, a knitted berry that her mother had made, sticky tape, a torch without a battery, a restaurant guide, a tape of Bob Marley songs, some cheap plastic toys from Christmas crackers, an old diary of Annie's, a couple of receipts, and a picture of Rhea and Hilary when they were in their teens. Rhea put everything on a tray and cleaned out the drawer with a damp cloth. She'd put nothing back in again. None of these things belonged there. Idly, she picked up Annie's diary. The funny slanted writing was small and crowded so that she could fit more in. Rhea smiled over the lists of hit singles, the top 10, the names and birth dates of various singers. Then there were bits about school and the fact that Annie wasn't allowed to sit beside Kitty because they talked too much. Some of the teachers were hateful, some weren't too bad, but a bit pathetic. It was exactly the kind of thing that Rhea used to write herself. She wondered where her old diaries were and whether her mother had ever read them. Then she came to Brian's birthday party. That time they had a barbecue for him. The writing was very small and crabbed here, as if every word was important and it must all be included. It was very hard to understand as well as to read. Rhea felt no compunction at all about reading the private diary. She had to know what had occurred that day. Annie wrote about it in veiled terms. Whatever it was, it had happened in the lane, and nobody knew, and it was truly the most horrifying thing in the world. She wrote that it most definitely was not her fault. All she had been doing was looking for the kitten. There was no crime in that. Her mother continued reading. "I don't care how marvellous Kitty says it is. I don't care what these feelings are. I don't believe them. Her face was all screwed up as if she was cross about something. I wouldn't tell Kitty because she'd laugh, and of course I couldn't tell Mam because she wouldn't believe me or she'd make some awful remark. I nearly told Cullum. He's so nice, he knew something was wrong, but I couldn't tell him. He has too many things to worry about anyway, and it's not a thing you could tell anybody. There aren't words to tell it. It was something I wish I'd never seen, but I did, and I can't unsee it now. I didn't know that's the way it was done. I thought you did it lying down. And her, of all people, I never liked her, and I like her less now. In fact, I think she's disgusting. There's ways I'd like her to know I saw, have some power over her, but that's not right either. She'd just laugh and be superior about it, as she is about everything." Rhea caught her breath. What could Annie have seen? Who was it? And where? Well, it couldn't have been Kitty, since she was mentioned in other contexts. The memory of the day of Brian's birthday came back to Rhea. Annie had come home after a fall outside Cullum's restaurant. Could she have seen Cullum Barry and that publican's wife? No. She mentioned Cullum as a nice person, and it was the woman she resented. Someone superior, someone scornful. Possibly it was Caroline. Could she have stumbled across that strange, withdrawn sister of Cullum and her big, ignorant husband? Or even Caroline and someone else? Would there be any clue? Rhea read on. "I don't care how marvellous they say love is. I'm not going to have any part of it. I wish Daddy would stop saying that one day some man will come and carry away his little princess. Not going to happen. Sometimes I wish I had never been born." Rhea sat down suddenly at the table that was strewn with all the clutter from the sideboard. She would have to return it all to where it came from. Annie must have stuffed the diary away hastily one time and meant to collect it later. Annie must never know that her mother had seen this diary. Marilyn looked around her house with an objective eye. How would it appear to someone who lived in a house that was over 100 years old? The items of furniture pictured in Rhea's home looked as if they were all antiques. Danny Lynch must have done very well at his business. Marilyn's house had been built in the early 1970s. Tudor Drive was part of an area developed for the increasing number of academics and business people
who wanted to enjoy a quiet and deliberately simple lifestyle. The homes all stood in their own grounds. The lawns and frontage were communally looked after. It was an affluent neighbourhood. Here and there, small white wooden churches made it look like a picture postcard saying, "Welcome to Connecticut." But it would all look very new and recent to someone who came from a civilization as old as the one that Rhea was leaving. In one of the books about Dublin that she was reading, Marilyn saw that they recommended an outing to see where St. Kevin had lived the life of a hermit on a beautiful lake south of Dublin. That was in the year 6-something, not 16-something, but the actual 7th century, and it was on their doorstep. Marilyn hoped that Rhea and her children wouldn't think that they had seen everything that Westville could offer in the first half hour, and would then wonder how to spend the rest of the time. Marilyn was tired from her constant clearing out of closets and leaving things ready for the new family. There'd be plenty of room for them all. Rhea would sleep in the main bedroom, and there were three other bedrooms. The people who designed this house must have had a more sociable and hospitable family than the Vines in mind. The guest rooms had hardly ever been used. They'd been so content on their own that they rarely invited visitors. Family came at Thanksgiving, and they put up people for the alumni picnic, but that was all. Now two Irish children would sleep in these rooms and play in the garden. The boy was 10. Marilyn hoped he wouldn't throw a football or anything onto her flower beds, but it wasn't something you could actually make rules about. It'd be suggesting to Rhea that she thought the boy would be out of control. Better to assume perfect behaviour rather than try and legislate for it. Marilyn paused with her hand on the door of one room. Should she lock it? Yes, of course she should. She didn't want strangers in here amongst these things. They wouldn't want to see it either. They would respect her for keeping her private memories behind a locked door. They wouldn't feel excluded. But then, wasn't it odd, somehow, to lock a room in the house which was meant to be these people's home? Marilyn wished there was someone she could ask, someone whose advice she could seek out and take, but who could she ask? Not Greg. He was still very cold and hurt, mystified by her decision to go to Ireland, irritated by Rhea coming to Tudor Drive, and unable to talk about any of it. Not Carlotta next door, who had been forever anxious to come in and be part of their lives. Marilyn had spent a long time carefully and courteously building up a relationship based on distance and respect, rather than neighbourly visits. She couldn't ruin it now by asking advice on a matter so intimate and personal that it would change everything between them. Not Heidi at the office. Whatever she did, she mustn't encourage Heidi, who was always asking Marilyn to join this or that, beginner's bridge, feng shui groups, embroidery circles. Heidi and Henry were so kind, they would have come around to Tudor Drive every single evening and picked her up to take her somewhere if she had allowed them to. But they had never really known what it was like to feel so restless. They'd both been married before and now found contentment in a mature second marriage. They were always entertaining in their home and attending the college functions. They couldn't understand someone who wanted to be alone. Marilyn thought she might lock the room, but leave the key somewhere for Rhea so that it didn't look so like an act of exclusion. She wouldn't decide now. She'd see how she felt the morning she left. And the time raced by. Summer came to Tara Road and Tudor Drive. Rhea marshalled her troops well in advance and encouraged them to welcome Marilyn and invite her into their homes. That's what Americans liked, visiting someone's home. Even mine? Hilary was unsure. Particularly yours. I want her to meet my sister and get to know her. But isn't she getting enough? Do you know what someone would pay for the use of that fine house for 2 months? Martin and I were saying that if you let it in Horseshow Week alone, you'd get a small fortune. Sure, Hilary. I wish you'd come out and see me there. We could meet Sheila Main and have great times. Millionaires can have great times, certainly, Hilary said. Rhea ignored her. You will keep an eye out for Marilyn, won't you? Ah, don't you know I will. And all the others had promised too. Her mother was going to take Marilyn to visit St. Rita's. She might enjoy meeting elderly Irish people with lots of memories. Frances Sullivan would ask her to tea and possibly to come to the theatre one night. Rosemary was having a summer party. She'd include Marilyn.
Polly Callahan called unexpectedly. I hear there's an American woman coming to stay. If she wants any chauffeuring around at weekends, tell her to get in touch. How did you know she was coming? Ria asked.
Danny told me.
Danny doesn't approve, Polly shrugged.
He can't have it every way.
He mainly has, I think.
Bernadette's not going to stay the distance, Ria, Polly said.
Ria's heart leapt. That was what she so desperately wanted to hear. Someone who knew them all and could make a judgment on who would win in the end. Someone like Polly who would be in her corner and tell her what was going on in the enemy camp. Ria was about to ask her what they were like together. Was it true that Bernadette didn't talk at all but sat with her hair falling over her face? She yearned to know that Danny looked sad and lost and like a man who'd made the wrong turning. But she pulled herself together sharply. Polly was Barney McCarthy's woman. She was in their camp when all was said and done. Ria mustn't give in to the need she felt to confide.
Well, who knows whether it will last or not. Anyway, it's not important. He wants her. We're not enough for him.
So be it. All men want more than they can have. Who knows that better than I do?
Well, you went the distance, Polly. You and Barney lasted, didn't you?
It was the first time Ria had ever mentioned the relationship, and she felt a little nervous at having done so.
Yes, true, but only unofficially. I mean, I'm still the woman in the background. That's all I'll ever be. Mona is the wife, the person of status.
I don't think so, actually. I think Mona is a fool, Ria said. If he loved you, then she should have let him go to you.
Polly pealed with laughter. Come on, you know better than that. He didn't want to leave her. He wanted us both. Just like Danny possibly wanted you both. You and the girl as well.
Ria played that conversation over in her mind many times. She didn't think that Polly was correct. Danny had been anxious to leave, to start again. And of course times were so different now to what they'd been when Barney McCarthy and Polly Callahan had fallen in love. She was surprised to get a telephone call from Mona wishing her luck in the States and offering her a loan of suitcases.
You have great courage, Ria. I admire you more than I can say.
Oh, no, you don't, Mona. You think I'm running away, making a feeble gesture. That's what most of Danny's friends think.
Well, I hope I'm your friend, too. I didn't know one thing about this other woman, you know. I wasn't part of any cover-up.
No, I'm sure that's true, Mona. Ria felt guilty then. For years, she herself had been part of a cover-up.
And Ria?
I think you're quite right to take a strong stand. I wish I'd done that years ago. I really do.
Ria could hardly believe this conversation was taking place. All the taboos with Polly and Mona suddenly broken after all the years.
You did what was right then, she said. I only did what made less waves. It wasn't necessarily what was right, Mona said. But great good luck to you out there, and if I can take your American friend anywhere, just ask her to call me.
Yes, they were all going to rally round when Marilyn arrived. Gertie was going to come and clean for her. Cullum had said he'd invite her to the restaurant, introduce her to a few people.
Cullum, can I ask you a strange question?
Anything.
It's ages ago now, but Annie had a fall outside your restaurant on the day of Brian's birthday, and you cleaned up her knee for her?
Yes, I remember.
And you made her a nice drink called a St. Clement's, and that's why she called the cat Clement?
Yes.
He looked wary.
It's just that, well, do you think Annie was upset by anything else that day, not just the fall, like some incident or something?
Why do you ask all this, Ria?
It's hard to say. Something came to my notice, as they say, and I was just wondering if you could throw any light on it.
Well, couldn't you ask her yourself?
No, there was a silence. It came to my notice reading her diary, Ria admitted.
Ah, you're shocked, she said. Not really. A little, maybe.
Every mother does, believe me.
I'm sure you're right. But what did you learn?
That she saw something that upset her, that's all.
She didn't tell me.
And I hope you don't think that I upset her.
He looked stern now. Oh, God, no. Oh, I've made a desperate mess of this. No, no, of course I don't think that. She said in her diary that you were so kind and helpful and she was going to tell you about it, but couldn't. I just wondered, did she see anything here?
Here?
She fell outside your restaurant, didn't she?
Cullum remembered that Annie had fallen in the back lane, but that was her secret, which he had kept. One she obviously hadn't shared with anyone, except with what she thought was her private diary.
No, Cullum said thoughtfully, there was nothing upsetting she could have seen here. Nothing at all.
Rhea pulled herself together. I feel very cheap admitting all this, but you'll have to forgive me. I'm saying goodbye to the children for a month tonight. It's a bit emotional.
They seem to be coping very well.
You are too, he admired her.
Oh, who knows how people cope, Rhea said. When my father died years and years ago, I used to keep searching the house in case he'd left us some treasure. And then my mother would stop going on about him and how badly he had provided for us. But to the outside world, people thought I'd got over it fine.
I know, Cullum was sympathetic. Caroline and I had a very drunken father, and I used to wish there was some kind of magic potion that we could give him and that he'd stop drinking and be a real dad. But there wasn't.
His face was empty as he spoke. Rhea had never known this about his background. We do let our children down. We read their diaries, we lose their fathers, we're hopeless. And I think I'll be able to make their world all right just by having a barbecue in the garden for them tonight. She gave a little laugh.
No, it'll be fine. I'll leave over some vegetables for Annie. She's still into that, isn't she?
Oh, she is, Cullum. Thank you. You've been a great friend through all this.
I'll miss you.
Baby Marilyn will be a dish, and you and she'll be a number when I get back.
I'll let you know, he promised.
And Rhea went home to face the evening when she'd say goodbye to her children. They had told her little or nothing about their meeting with Bernadette. Rhea had been longing to know every detail, but wouldn't ask. She mustn't make them feel they had to report back from one camp to another. She learned only practical things, like that the holiday on the Shannon cruiser was back on course, that the new house had been hurried on. Barney McCarthy's men were there night and day finishing the renovations, and it was now finally ready, smelling of paint, but ready. They would sleep there tomorrow night. Rhea learned there'd be two beds in Annie's room, and there was a bunk bed being installed for Brian in a sort of outhouse that was once going to have appliances, whatever they were. Washing machines, dryers, Rhea had explained. Brian was disappointed. He thought they might be scientific things. And they'd met Bernadette's mother, who was all right, really, and would drive them to a swimming pool for a course of 6 lessons, so that they could get themselves ready for the one in America. Rhea felt she knew everything and yet nothing about the life that her children would live without her. It was an uncanny feeling, as if she'd died and was hovering overhead like a ghost, anxious to intervene, but unable to speak because she didn't have a body. They had supper in the garden, kebabs, with sausages for Brian and lots of little vegetables that Cullum had left in a basket for Annie. Clement seemed to know they were going. He came and looked at them all reproachfully.
Oh, I hope she'll play with him, you know, entertain him a bit, Annie said. Clement is not a cat who should be left to brood too much. It doesn't suit him.
Well, you can come and visit Marilyn and tell her about his personality, can't you? Rhea suggested.
This isn't our house anymore. Not after tomorrow morning when you go, Annie said.
No, that's true, but on the other hand, it'll be lived in by someone whose own house you're going to visit, and it would be nice to introduce yourselves to her.
Do we have to?
Brian saw tedious conversations with adults ahead.
No, of course not. It might be nice, that's all.
Anyway, Cullum will keep an eye on Clement. Cullum loves him as much as I do, Annie said, cheering up.
There was no point whatsoever in hoping for any confidences from Annie, and she must never in a million years confide what she had read. Any possible trust that might grow between them would have been destroyed if that were ever known. They talked on easily in the warm night about plans.
Rosemary had offered to drive the children to Danny's new house tomorrow morning so that Rhea would have time to leave the house unfussed. Most of their things were there already. Rhea had taped to the inside of their suitcases lists of clothes that they were to pack for the boat trip. They were to check these carefully before they left.
"She said you were very organized," Brian said.
"Bernadette said that?" Rhea tried not to sound too interested.
"When she saw the suitcases and Dad said you were the queen of the lists."
Brian looked at her eagerly, hoping she'd be pleased. But Annie, who was sharper, knew that her mother wouldn't like to hear of this discussion. "But so I am. Your dad's right," Rhea said with a brightness she certainly didn't feel. She hated the thought of Danny mocking her list-making activities with this child Bernadette.
"Dad's coming round here later to say goodbye, isn't he?"
Brian's face was still hoping for some reassurance that things were normal. "That's right. When you've gone to bed, there are a few last-minute things we have to discuss."
"You won't have altered fights or anything?" Annie checked.
"No, we don't do that anymore. You know that."
"Oh, not in front of us, you don't. But you obviously drive each other mad," Annie pronounced.
"I don't think that's so at all. But then we all look at people's lives differently. I often think that your gran is crazy to spend so much time with those old people in St. Rita's instead of with people of her own age. But she's as happy as a songbird there."
"But that's only 'cause they depend on her there. They need her. And she's only a young thing up in St. Rita's. Not an old bag as she is with other people," said Annie, as if it were dead simple to understand.
Rhea told them she'd telephone every Saturday and they could ring any time because there was an answering machine, but not to waste Dad's and Bernadette's money on long calls.
"I don't think she has much money," Brian said. "I think it's mainly Dad's."
"Brian, you have the brain of a flea," Annie said. Danny arrived at 10 o'clock. With a shock, Rhea felt how physically attractive he still was to her and would always be. Nothing had changed very much since those first days when she had met him at the estate agency. The line of his face had something about it that made you want to stroke him. She had to control herself before she stretched out a hand to touch him. She must behave calmly. He mustn't know how much power he had to move her. "We'll go out to the garden in a minute. It's so peaceful. But first, what would you like? Tea? A drink?"
Any lager?"
"Oh, sorry, no. Is that a new taste?"
"I'll have tea," he said.
"Do we drive each other mad?" Rhea asked companionably as she put on the kettle.
"No, I don't think so. Why do you ask?"
"The kids think we do."
"Oh, what do they know?" he grinned.
"They say the new house is very nice," she said.
"Good, good."
"Can I ask you to keep a sharp eye on that kitty?"
"All right, we know I never liked her, but she is a little madam and she really could lead Annie astray."
"Sure. Anything else?"
"Brian is by nature filthy. I mean, truly filthy. You wouldn't believe it. It just could be very unpleasant in close quarters like a boat. You might just insist on clean clothes every day. Otherwise, he'll wear the same things for a month." Danny smiled.
"I'll note that."
"And is there anything for me to look out for when they come to Westville? Is there anything you don't want them to do?"
He looked surprised to be asked and pleased.
"I don't know. All the traffic, I imagine. Warn them it'll be coming from a different side when they cross the road."
"Well, that's very sensible. I'll warn them all the time.
And maybe they could do some educational things there, you know, museums, art galleries. Things that would help them at school."
"Sure, Danny."
They brought their mugs of tea out to the garden and sat on the stone bench. There was a silence.
"About money," he said.
"Well, I bought my air ticket. You've bought theirs. The rest is just as if we were here, isn't it? I mean, the same household expenses, except that I'll be paying them there."
"Yes."
His voice seemed a bit flat.
"Well, that's all right, isn't it?"
"Yes, of course."
"And the electricity, gas and phone are all paid by banker's order here?"
"Yes,"
he said again.
"So that's money sorted out, is it?" Rhea asked.
"I suppose so."
"And I hope you all have a lovely time on the Shannon. Are you going south or north when you get on the boat?"
"South, to Loch Derg. Lots of lovely little places to moor. It'd be fabulous if we got the weather."
They were talking like two strangers.
Sure you will. The long-range forecast is good, Rhea said cheerfully. There was another silence.
And I hope this place works out very well for you, too, he said.
Oh, I'm sure it will, Danny. Thank you for accepting it all. I appreciate that.
No, no, it's only fair, he said.
I've left your telephone number for Marilyn.
Good, good.
And perhaps you might bring the children round here to meet her one day?
What? Oh, yes, certainly.
Probably best to ring in advance.
Indeed.
There was nothing left to say. They walked up the stairs and stood awkwardly in the hall, which had been full of crates and boxes and bicycles on the day they had vowed to make it a great home for ever and ever. Now the polished floor with its two good rugs glowed warmly in the evening light. The door to the front room was open. There on their table was a bowl of roses that Cullum had picked to welcome the American guest. They reflected in the wood. The clock on the mantelpiece chimed, and the wind moved the heavy velvet curtains. Danny went in and looked around him. Surely he was full of regret, not just for these pieces, but for the time and energy and love that had gone into gathering them. He seemed to be swallowing as he looked around. He was very still. None of his usual quick movement. He was like a photograph of himself. Rhea knew she'd never forget him standing there like this, his hand on the back of one of the chairs. He looked as if he had just thought of the one final thing that this room needed. Maybe a grandfather clock. Possibly another mirror to reflect the window. His face had that kind of look. He did not look like a man about to go away from all that he'd built up, to stay with a pregnant girl called Bernadette. He looked like someone about to put down his car keys and say he was home and that it had all been a ridiculous mistake. It would be too late now, of course, to stop Marilyn, but they would find her another place to stay, and everything would be as it was. And they wouldn't wake the children now to tell them. Let them find out tomorrow. That was the kind of look he had, and the aura that surrounded him. Rhea said nothing. She stood holding her breath, as if waiting for him to begin to rebuild the dream. It was very important not to say the wrong thing now. She'd been brilliant so far this evening, calm and undramatic. She knew he'd valued it. His smile was warm, not strained. He'd laughed aloud when she told him how smelly and dirty his son was. His arm had brushed against hers on the stairs, and he hadn't flinched away as he'd done during all their prickly conversations. He stood almost transfixed in this room. Rhea didn't know for how long. It felt like a long time. The room was working a magic of its own. He would speak. He would say it was madness. All of this, total madness. He was so sorry he'd hurt so many people. And she would forgive him, gently and soothingly, and he'd know that he'd come back home where he belonged. Why was he taking so long to find the words? Should she help him? Give him a pointer in the right direction? And then he looked at her directly, and she saw he was biting his lip. He really was struggling to say what was almost too huge to be said. How could she let him know how great would be her forgiveness and understanding, how much she would do to have him home with her again? Words had been her undoing in the past, apparently. He'd thought she was babbling and prattling. Horrible, horrible phrases, when she thought she'd been talking, confiding. She knew that whatever the temptation, she must say nothing. Their whole future depended on this. She moved very slightly towards him, just one step, and it seemed to have been enough. He came and put his arms around her, his head on her shoulder. He wasn't actually crying, but he was trembling and shaking so heavily that she could feel it all through his body. Rhea, Rhea, what a mess, what a waste. And a mess, he said. It doesn't have to be. She was very gentle into his ear. Oh, God, I wish it had all been different. I wish that so much. He wasn't looking at her, still talking to her hair.
It can be. It can be all that we make it, she said. Slowly, Rhea, slowly, she warned herself. Don't gabble. Don't come out with a long list of promises and resolutions and entreaties. Let him do the asking and say yes. Stroke his forehead and say that it will be all right in the end. That's what he wants to hear. He moved his face from her neck and he was about to kiss her. She must respond as the old passionate Rhea would have. She raised her arms from his shaking shoulders and almost clenched him around the neck. Her lips sought his, searching and demanding. It was so good to hold him again. She felt herself carried away in what could only be called a flood of passion, and didn't realize for an instant that he was tugging at her hands behind his neck.
Rhea, Rhea, what are you doing? Rhea, stop!
He seemed shocked and appalled. She pulled away, mystified. He'd reached for her. He'd laid his head on her shoulder and said it was a waste, a mess. He said he wanted to undo it, hadn't he? Why was he looking at her like this? It'll be all right, she said, flustered now, but sure that her role must still be one of making smooth his homecoming. I promise you, Danny, it'll be all right. It will all sort itself out. This is where you belong.
Rhea!
He was horrified now. This is your room. You created this. It's yours, like we're your family. You know that.
I beg you, Rhea.
And I beg you, come back. We won't talk about it now. Just stay. It'll all be as it was. I'll understand. You'll have responsibilities to Bernadette and even affection.
Stop.
She'll get over it, Danny. She's a child. She has her whole life ahead of her with someone of her own age. She'll look back on it as something foolish, wonderful, but foolish. And we'll just accept it into our lives the way people do.
Well, this isn't possible. That you should, I don't know, suddenly change like this.
He did look bewildered. But this was madness. He was the one who had reached out for her. You helped me. You told me it was all a mess and a mistake and a waste. And you were sorry you did it.
I didn't, Rhea. I said I was sorry, but I didn't say the other things.
You said you wished it hadn't turned out like this. I'm saying come back. I won't ask you where you are if you stay out late. I swear I won't. Please, Danny, please. The tears were pouring down her face now, and he was standing there horrified.
Oh, Danny,
I love you so much I'd forgive anything you did. You know that.
I'd do anything on earth that it takes to have you back.
She was gulping now, and she stretched her arms out to him.
He took her hands in both of his. Look, love, I'm going now, this minute. You don't mean any of this, not a word of it. You meant all the things we talked about for half an hour in the garden. You meant about wishing us all a good holiday on the Shannon, and I meant about hoping it all goes well for you in America.
He looked at her hopefully, as if praying that his nice, practical, soothing words would stop her tears and prevent the danger of her clutching him again.
I'll always be here waiting for you to come back. Just remember that. No, you won't. You'll be in America having a great time.
He tried to jolly her along.
A strange woman will be here trying to make head or tail of our funny ways.
I'll be here. This room will always be here for you.
No, Rhea. That's not the way things are. And I'm going now, but I want you to know how...
How what? She asked.
How generous it would have been of you to make that offer, if there had been any question of it. It would have been a very unselfish thing to do.
She looked at him in amazement. He didn't see that there was no unselfishness or generosity involved. It was what she ached for. She'd never realized that, and now she'd made a total fool of herself on top of everything else. The weeks of planning and driving herself and discipline had been thrown away. Why had they come into this room anyway? If she hadn't seen that look on his face, she might not have seen a possible lifeline. But she had seen it. She hadn't imagined it.
That's what she would hug to herself always.
Yes, it's late. Of course you must go, she said. The tears had stopped. She wasn't the calm Rhea who had walked up the stairs from the kitchen with him. Her face was too tear-stained for that. But she was in control again, and she could sense his relief.
Safe journey, he said to her on the steps.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm sure it'll be fine.
And we did make a lovely house, Rhea. We really did.
He looked back past her into the hall.
Yes, yes, indeed. And two marvellous children, she said.
On the steps of the house they had spent so long creating, Danny and Rhea kissed each other cautiously on the cheek. Then Danny got into his car and drove away. And Rhea went into her home in Tara Road and sat for a long time at her round table, staring sightless in front of her.
Chapter 5
They didn't fight, Annie said to Brian as she helped him close his suitcase.
How'd you know?
I listened for a bit at the bathroom window. They talked about holidays.
Ah, oh, good,
Brian said. She said to Dad that you are filthy, though. Brian looked surprised, but unconvinced.
No, she didn't. She wouldn't say that about me. What'd make her say that?
His face looked round with worry, and he took pity on him.
No,
I made it up, she lied.
I knew.
Brian's faith in his mother was restored.
I wish she wasn't going, Annie said. So do I.
It was such a rare thing for the brother and sister to be joined in any emotion that it startled them. They looked at each other uncertainly. These were very troubled times. Rosemary arrived earlier than expected. Rhea handed her a cup of coffee.
You look fine, Rosemary said approvingly.
Sure. I came early to leave you less time for tearful farewells.
Where are they, anyway?
Finishing their packing.
Rhea sounded very muted.
They'll be okay, I know.
Rosemary looked at her friend sharply. Was it all right last night with Danny and everything?
What? Oh, yes, very civilized.
Never in a million years would anyone know how it had been last night with Danny. Rhea wouldn't allow it to be spoken of even in her own heart.
Well, then, that's good.
There was a silence.
Rhea?
Yes?
You know they'll never see Bernadette as anything except what she is.
Oh, I know, of course.
They won't bond with her or anything like that. Can you imagine what she feels like having to replace you for a month? What a task that would be for anyone, let alone a dumb kid like that.
There was no reply, so Rosemary just carried on.
You know, I did think this whole jaunt to America was mad, but now I think it's the cleverest thing you could have done. You're really much sharper than anyone gives you credit for. Hey, here come the kids.
What do you want, lingering or brisk?
Brisk. And you're wonderful, Rhea said gratefully.
In minutes, Rhea was waving goodbye as Rosemary drove the children to stay in a strange house for the month of July. Who'd ever have believed that any of this could happen? And what was even more incredible was that Rosemary actually thought that Rhea had been somehow clever to engineer this situation. Bernadette's mother was sitting at the kitchen table in the new house.
Well, she's a fine, hard-hearted Hannah, isn't she? Sweeping off to the United States and leaving you to look after her children.
I know, Mum, but in a way it's for the best.
How is it for the best?
Finola Dunn couldn't see any silver lining.
Well, I suppose she won't be there in Tara Road anymore as a kind of a centre for him, you know?
She wasn't much of a centre for him when she was there, judging from the amount of time he spent with you.
Bernadette's mother always managed to sound disapproving of her daughter's affair with a married man, while equally proud that the matter had been so satisfactorily sorted out.
There was his home for 16 years. It still has a great draw for him, the place.
Oh, this place will too in time, child. Wait till it gets a bit more settled.
Finola Dunn looked round the luxury-fitted kitchen which Barney McCarthy's men had installed at double speed. This was an expensive house in one of the more fashionable southern suburbs of Dublin. Must have cost a packet. It was a sheltered avenue, a good place to bring up a new baby, and a lot of other young couples around. Finola Dunn knew that Danny Lynch was a hot-shot estate agent, but she felt that the sooner he sold the Tara Road house, realised his money and got some small, more suitable place for his first wife, the better. The boy worked hard, she gave him that, and he obviously adored Bernadette, but he'd wear himself out unless he sorted out his finances. He'd left this morning for a meeting at 6 a.m. to avoid the traffic. "Any mention of his selling Tara Road?" she asked.
"No, and it's not something I ask about. I think he was more attached to that house than to any woman. It gives me the shivers," Bernadette said.
"Oh, no time for that. They'll be here any minute, and a long summer of entertaining them begins."
"Only 30 days, and they're not too bad," said Bernadette with a grin.
Rhea's children were very quiet in Rosemary's car.
"What kind of things will you do all day, do you imagine?" Rosemary asked brightly.
"No idea," Annie shrugged. "They don't have cable television," Brian said.
"Maybe they'll take you out to places," Rosemary was optimistic.
"She's very quiet. She doesn't go to places," Brian said.
"Is she nice? I mean, interesting to talk to?"
"Not very,"
Brian said. "She's okay. Just, you know, nothing much to say," Annie said.
"I prefer her mother, actually," Brian said. "You'd like her, Rosemary. She's full of chat, more your age."
"I'm sure I would," said Rosemary Ryan, who could cope with any boardroom committee meeting or television discussion, but was finding this conversation very hard going indeed. At Dublin Airport, Rhea looked around. So many people heading off in so many directions. She wondered whether any of them could be travelling in such a confused state of mind as she was. In the line next to her, she saw a good-looking man with the collar of his raincoat turned up. He'd fair hair that fell into his eyes. She looked at him wildly. For an instant, she thought it was Danny, racing out to stop her leaving, a last-minute plea that she change her mind. She remembered, with the feeling of a shower of cold water, that this was the last thing on earth he'd do. She could still feel him tugging at her hands, which she'd clasped around his neck. Her face burned at the shame of it. She walked through the duty-free shop, wondering what she should buy. It seemed such a pity to waste the value that was there on all those shelves. But she didn't smoke, she drank little, she didn't need anything electronic. Marilyn's house would be full of more equipment than she'd ever learned to use. She stopped by the perfumes.
"I want something very new, something I've never smelled before, which will have no memories," she said.
The assistant seemed used to such requests. Together they examined the new scents and settled on one that was light and flowery. It cost £40.
"Seems rather a lot," Rhea said doubtfully.
"Well, it is, but then it depends. Do you have that kind of money to spend on a good perfume?"
The girl clearly wanted to move on.
"I don't know whether I do or not," Rhea spoke with wonder. "Isn't that odd? I actually don't know what my financial situation will be. I never thought about it until this minute. I might be the kind of person who could afford this and more, or I might never be able to buy anything remotely like it in my whole life."
"I should take it then," said the sales assistant, quickly trying to head off too much philosophy.
"You're right, I will," said Rhea.
She fell asleep on the plane and dreamed that Marilyn hadn't left Tudor Drive after all, but was sitting waiting for her in the garden. Marilyn had brown hair and copper shoes and was wearing a beige suit just like Bernadette's mother had worn. She spoke with a cackle when Rhea arrived.
"I'm not Marilyn, you stupid woman. I'm Danny's new mother-in-law. I've got you out here so that they can all move into Tara Road. It's all a trick, a trick, a trick."
Rhea woke sweating. Her heart was racing. It was an extraordinary sensation to be on a plane thousands of feet up in the air, people around her eating lunch. The air hostess was concerned. "Are you all right? You're as white as anything."
"Oh, yes, I had a bad dream, that's all."
Rhea smiled her gratitude for the concern. "Have you anyone meeting you at Kennedy?"
"No, but I know the bus to take. I'll be fine."
"A holiday, is it?"
"Yes, I think it is. I'm sure that's what you'd call it, what I call it. It'll certainly be a holiday."
Rhea saw the nervous smile of the courteous girl in her stewardess uniform. Oh, really, she must stop this habit of analysing what she was doing. It was just that simple questions caught her unawares. She lay back and closed her eyes. How ridiculous of her subconscious to have made Marilyn look like Bernadette's mother, when of course she looked totally different. Rhea opened her eyes suddenly in shock. She'd no idea whatsoever what Marilyn looked like. She knew the measurements of her swimming pool, the voltage of her electricity, The weight of laundry that the dryer could handle, the times of church services in Westville, and the days of the week the garbage was collected. She had the names and phone numbers of two women called Carlotta and Heidi. She had photographs of the rock garden, the main bedroom, the swimming pool and carport. She knew that Marilyn would have her 40th birthday while she was in Ireland, but she did not know whether she was fair or dark, tall or small, thin or fat. Extraordinary to think that an entirely unknown woman had set out for Tara Road last night and nobody knew what she looked like. The flights to Dublin were at night and there was a coach service to Kennedy Airport from a nearby town. Marilyn accepted Heidi's offer to drive her there. She closed the door and left the keys and an envelope of instructions with Carlotta. Rhea would call to collect them when she arrived in the early evening. She'd left her house in perfect order. Clean, freshly laundered linen and towels everywhere, food in the icebox, flowers on the table and the breakfast bar. She decided about locking the room only when she heard Heidi's car pull up outside the house. She left the door closed, but not locked. Rhea would understand. She would treat it appropriately. She would probably dust it and open the windows during the 2 months. There were some things you didn't need to say or to write down. Heidi chatted and asked questions all the way to the coach terminal. Did Rhea play bridge by any chance? Would Marilyn take any courses in Trinity College when she was in Dublin? What would the weather be like? And casually, very casually, would Greg be joining her there at all? Or might he be coming back to Westville during the vacation? To none of these questions did Marilyn give any satisfactory reply, but she did hug her friend Heidi just before she got on the coach. You're very generous, and I do hope to be generous myself one day, when I come out of this forest, this awful forest. Heidi looked after the bus as it pulled out of the station. Marilyn sat there bolt upright reading a letter. Her eyes were very bright. It was the nearest that Marilyn had come to being human for a long time. Marilyn read the letter she had written to Greg again and again. She'd put as much of her soul into it as she could, and she realized that she was still holding back a lot. It was as if there was some kind of break, refusing her permission to explain too much. Or maybe there was no more to explain. It was quite possible that she'd lost the capacity to love and care anymore, and that this is how she was going to be for the rest of her life. She took out the little wallet of pictures that Rhea had sent. Every one of them had people in them, and little notes on the back. Annie doing her homework in our front room. Brian serving a pizza in the kitchen. My mother and sister Hilary. Me with my friend Gertie, who also helps with the cleaning, hanging out the washing. Our friend Rosemary, who lives up the road. Colin Barry, who runs a kitchen garden at the back of our house and a restaurant at the corner of Tara Road. The best picture of the house itself also showed a family of four squinting into the sun. On the back, Rhea had written, "In happier times." Marilyn studied Danny Lynch carefully. He was handsome, certainly, and very unchanged from the boyish, enthusiastic salesman she'd met all those years ago. Then she looked at Rhea. Small, dark, always smiling. Her whole face was lit up with goodwill in every single snapshot. It was very different in a lot of ways to the voice she'd talked to on the phone. There Rhea sounded tense and anxious, anxious to please that her house should be good enough, anxious to reassure that her children were going to be no trouble when they came to Westville. And most of all anxious that Marilyn would be swept immediately into this huge group of family, friends and acquaintances. Never had anyone been a more unlikely starter. Marilyn Vine, who kept herself so withdrawn from colleagues, family, friends and neighbours that they called her a recluse. Marilyn Vine, unable to talk to her own husband and tell him why she was making this strange journey. Well, she'd be polite to these people, of course, but she didn't want anything at all to do with their lives.
"Can I ask Kitty to supper, please, Bernadette?" Annie asked. Bernadette raised her eyes from the book she was reading.
"No, sorry, your father said no."
"She always comes at home. When Dad was at home, he liked her."
"Well, he must have gone off her."
Bernadette wasn't very concerned.
"Will Mum
be in America yet?
Asked Brian.
Don't go on about ma'am,
Annie corrected him with a hiss.
Okay, Bernadette shrugged. She was back in her book. She really didn't seem to mind.
Well, will she?
Brian wanted his question answered.
Bernadette looked up again perfectly pleasantly, but they felt she would have preferred there to be silence in the house.
Let me see, it takes about 5 or 6 hours. Yes, I'd say she'd be there now. On a bus to wherever the place is she's going.
Westville, Annie said.
Yes, that's right. Bernadette was reading again. There didn't seem to be any more to say. Dad wouldn't be home until 8 o'clock. It was a long sort of an evening. Out of sheer desperation, Annie took out Animal Farm, one of the books that her mother had given her to pack. I don't think I'd like it, Annie had said at the time. But surprisingly, she did, very much. And Brian read his book of soccer heroes. So, when Danny came home, tired and apprehensive, he found them all sitting in armchairs, reading peacefully. Annie looked up and saw the pleasure in her father's face. This was so different to Tara Road. But he must miss it all there, surely he did, even if he didn't love Mam any more and preferred Bernadette and all that. There was no bustle of dinner being prepared here. Bernadette would take out 2 frozen dishes shortly and put them in the microwave. There was no endless stream of people passing through, no Gertie coming and going, no Rosemary popping in and out, no Kitty, no awful Miles and Deco, no Gran with pliers or Cullum with his basket of vegetables. Surely Dad must miss all that very much. But as Annie looked at her father, she knew with a great certainty that he preferred things like this. He laid his keys in a long oval dish.
I'm home, he said,
and everyone sprang into action to welcome him. When he said he was home in Tara Road, there was so much going on that nobody seemed to notice. All the instructions had worked like a dream. The bus was where Marilyn had said it would be. The fare was exactly as she had described. The weather was warm and sunny, much hotter than back in Dublin. The noise and the variety of people everywhere was extraordinary. Yet, despite it all, Rhea felt well able to cope. She had expert guidelines and the whole system seemed to be working perfectly. The first coach driver told her when they got to the big town where to find the next and smaller bus to Westville. Rhea took a deep breath when she saw the sign for Westville coming up. This was going to be her home now. She almost wanted to look at it unobserved for a while, so she took her 2 suitcases into an ice cream parlour and sat down to get her bearings. The menu was exotic. Marilyn would find the range of ice cream sodas, floats and specials very much less extensive in Dublin. And still, she wasn't there for the ice cream. Rhea watched the people come and go. A lot of them knew each other. The woman behind the counter seemed a real personality, wisecracking with the customers, just like they did in television comedies. She was in America now. She wouldn't start comparing and contrasting everything with the way it was at home. She'd even tried to think in dollars rather than converting it back to pounds all the time. From her window seat in the happy soda house, Rhea could see Carlotta's beauty salon. It looked elegant, a discreet sort of place, where a woman might go in and, behind those heavy cream-coloured curtains and all that gold lettering, get good advice about keeping old age at bay and keeping your man at home. She wondered what Carlotta herself looked like. There'd been no pictures, no photos of any person at all. Steeling herself, Rhea crossed the road, her dark green travelling outfit of jumper and skirt and her 2 suitcases looking out of place here. Everyone else seemed to be wearing Bermuda shorts or crisp cotton dresses. They all looked as if they'd been to beauty salons already. Rhea felt travel-stained and tired. She pushed the door and went in. Carlotta was the tall, full-bosomed, almost Mexican-looking woman at the desk. She excused herself from the client she was talking to and came over at once.
Rhea, welcome to the United States. I hope you're going to love Westville. We are just delighted that you're here.
It was so warm, so genuine, and so utterly unexpected that Rhea felt a prickle of tears in her eyes. Carlotta was looking at her with an expert eye.
I was keeping an eye out for those buses. They come in every 20 minutes, but I guess one must have come now without my noticing it.
I went into the Happy Soda House, Rhea confessed. She realized it was a dull and indeed ungracious thing to say in response to all this welcome and kindness, and Rhea did want to respond. This woman was so outgoing compared to Marilyn, who had sometimes been a little terse on the phone. Carlotta was making such overtures of friendship that Rhea was appalled at her own inability to find the proper words. Oh, you'll have to forgive me. I seem to be sort of shell-shocked. I'm not used to long flights and things. Her voice trailed away.
Do you know what I was going to suggest to you, Rhea? Suppose you relax here. Have a nice shower. A relaxing aromatherapy massage. Katie doesn't have a client at the moment. Then you go and have a lie down in a dark room, and I come and wake you up in a couple of hours and we go back home. Or would you prefer if I drove you straight out to Marilyn's home? Either is fine with me.
Rhea thought that she would love to stay in the salon. Katie was one of those women who make no small talk and ask no questions. Rhea felt no need to apologize for her tired, neglected skin, for the lines appearing around her eyes, for the chin that was definitely more slack than it used to be. The healing, soothing oils were gently and insistently massaged into the various pressure points, temples, shoulders, scalp. It felt wonderful. Once before, Rhea had gone for this aromatherapy with Rosemary as a treat, and Rhea had promised it to herself every month, 12 times a year. But she never had. It was too expensive, and there were always things she wanted to buy for the children or the house. Her mind started to go down that channel again about what she could afford from now on, but she forced it back. Anyway, here in this cool, dark place, with that wonderful rhythmic massage of her shoulders and back, with that intense, satisfying smell of the oils, it was easy to banish worries and to fall into a deep sleep.
I hardly like to wake you up.
Carlotta was handing her a glass of fruit juice,
but otherwise your sleeping pattern will go astray.
Rhea was now her old self again. She got up from her relaxation bed in the pink cotton robe that had been provided and came out to shake Carlotta's hand. I can't thank you enough for this terrific welcome. It was exactly what I needed and I didn't know. You couldn't have arranged anything that I would have liked more. Carlotta knew genuine appreciation when she saw it.
Get your clothes on, Rhea. I'll take you home. You're going to have a great summer here, believe me.
Rhea was about to leave when Katie handed her a piece of paper. She wondered if it was some advice about future skin care that she'd study later, but she looked at it anyway. It was a bill for an amount of money that Rhea would never in her whole life have spent in a beauty salon. She had thought it was a complimentary treatment. How humiliating. She must show no hint that she was surprised. Of course, she said.
Carlotta wanted you to have a 15% discount, so that's all built into the check and services included, Katie said.
Rhea handed over the money with a sickening feeling that she was a great fool. Why should she have thought that this woman was giving her a free treatment? She was living amongst people who took beauty salons as a matter of course. Possibly if she had done so years ago, she mightn't be in the position she was in now. Gertie had arranged to be in Tara Road when Marilyn arrived. Rhea had said there just had to be someone to open the door. It was a high priority.
Suppose, Gertie, that there's any crisis or anything. Will you make sure that my mother's installed here instead of you? You will, won't you?
Crisis? Gertie had asked as if such a thing had never occurred in her life. Well, you know, anything could happen.
Listen, there's going to be someone to meet her. Gertie spoke very definitely.
And just as Gertie was leaving her house to head to Rhea's, she got the message that Jack was in hospital. There'd been a fight somewhere last night, and Jack had only recovered consciousness now. Gertie ran down the road to the little house where Nora Johnson lived, but she wasn't at home. Possibly gone to St. Rita's, her neighbour didn't know. Gertie damned Danny Lynch to the pit of hell. All her anger was directed at him.
If he hadn't abandoned his wife for some pale-faced child, none of this would be happening. Gertie wouldn't be running from house to house looking for someone to open Ria's door and greet some American woman. Jimmy Sullivan said that Frances was at the thrift shop and wouldn't be able to get away. Gertie ran to the restaurant. Please, please, let Colum not have gone to a market or anything. Please, God, if you're there, and really, I know you are there, let Colum Barry be at home. He's fond of the Lynches, he'd do it, and he'd be nice to the woman, please. Gertie never prayed to God to ask him to make Jack behave like a normal man. Some things were too big even for the Almighty to undertake, but something like Colum being in could happen, and did happen.
Let me drive you somewhere first, Gertie. She won't be in for another half hour.
No, no, I couldn't let Ria down.
We know she's going to come into the city, look around for a few hours, and then come here at 12. That's the arrangement.
She might come early. Anyway, I can go on the bus.
I'll drive you. Which hospital?
As they sat in the car, Gertie twisted a handkerchief in her hands, but there was no conversation. You're very restful, Colum, really you are. Anyone else would be asking questions.
What's there to ask?
Like, why does he do it?
Why ask that question? I did it for so long myself. People were possibly asking that question fairly uselessly about me all over the shop.
He was very reassuring, just what she needed. She stopped tearing at the piece of cotton in her hands. Maybe people would ask why I stay with him.
Oh, well, that's easy. He's very lucky, that's all.
How do you mean?
I had nobody to stay with me. No one to cushion things, so eventually I had to face it, what a lousy life I had.
Well, doesn't that mean being on your own might have made you strong? Gertie's face was anguished. That's what my mother's always telling me. She says give him up and he'll come to his senses.
Colum shrugged. It could work. Who knows? But I'll tell you one thing. Coming to my senses was no bloody fun at all, because all I came to was a hollow, empty life.
He left her at the gate of the hospital and drove back to welcome Ria's American. Marilyn told herself that Ria's instructions about what to do on arriving in Dublin had been excellent. They'd agreed not to meet, since it would be a rushed, hopeless meeting with one arriving and the other leaving. Marilyn's overnight plane would be in by 7 o'clock. Ria advised she should get the bus to the city, leave her bags, and walk up to have breakfast in a Grafton Street coffee shop. That way she'd pass O'Connell Bridge on the River Liffey, the entrance to Trinity College, and she'd see the various bookshops and gift stores which she might like to explore later. After breakfast, she should go up and walk around St. Stephen's Green. A few statues and points of interest were listed, and a gentle itinerary, ending up at a taxi rank where she should take a cab, pick up her luggage and head for Tara Road. One of the people already mentioned would be there to welcome her in and show her around. It had all gone extremely well. The city began to fall back into place for Marilyn. She hadn't properly remembered the whole layout from the brief visit before. It had certainly changed and become much more prosperous in the intervening years. The traffic was much denser, the cars bigger, the people better dressed. Around her were foreign accents, different languages. It wasn't only American tourists who came to the craft shops nowadays. The place seemed full of other Europeans. Around 11:30, her feet were beginning to feel tired. Ria would be boarding her plane just about now. It was time to find her new home. The taxi driver told her a long, complicated tale of woe about there being too many taxis allowed on the streets of the city and not enough work for them. He said that most people were on the take all the world over, and that he was sorry that he hadn't emigrated to America like his brother, who now had a toupee and a German wife. He said that Tara Road was the fastest-moving bit of property in Dublin, a regular gold mine. "If your friends owned that house, ma'am, they're sitting on half a million," he said confidently, as he drove in the gateway and drew up at the foot of the steps. The door was opened by a dark, good-looking man in his early 40s. He came down the steps, hand stretched out. "On Ria's behalf, you're very welcome to Tara Road," he said, while Marilyn frantically searched for his name from the cast of thousands she'd been presented with. Somehow she'd thought it would be the sister Hilary or one of the two women friends.
"I'm Colum Barry, neighbour and friend.
I also dig the back garden, but I use a back gate, so I'll be no intrusion in your time here.
Marilyn looked at him gratefully. He seemed to tell her what she needed to know, and not too much. He was courteous, but also he was cool in a way that she very much liked.
Indeed, the man who runs the restaurant? She said, placing him at last.
The very one, he agreed.
He carried her cases up the granite steps. Rhea's photographs hadn't lied. The hall was glorious, with its deep, glowing wooden floor and elegant hall table. The door to a front room was open. Colum pushed it slightly.
If it were my house, I would never leave this room, he said simply. It runs the whole depth of the house, windows at each end. It's just lovely.
On the table was a huge bowl of roses.
Rhea asked me to leave those for you.
Marilyn felt a gulp in her voice as she thanked him. The place was so beautiful, and these rich pink and red roses on such a beautiful table were the final touch. He carried her bag upstairs and showed her the main bedroom.
I expect this is where you'll be. I'm sure all the details were written out for you. Rhea's been getting ready for weeks. I know she's got into huge trouble.
Marilyn knew it too. Her eyes took in the immaculate white bed cover, brand new, must have been put on this morning, the folded towels, the shiny paintwork, and the empty closet. This woman had worked at getting her house ready. Marilyn hoped that hers would match up. They went down to the kitchen, and at that moment the cat flap opened and a large ginger cat came in.
This is Clement.
Colum introduced the cat formally.
An excellent cat. He has a little weakness sometimes of killing a perfectly innocent bird for no reason, and then he'll bring it back to you as a trophy.
I know. I have to say, well done, Clement. How lovely, Marilyn said with a smile.
Good. Just so long as you know the drill. Anyway, Clement isn't very competitive. Usually he just opens one eye and looks at the birds and then goes back to sleep.
Colum continued his tour of the kitchen, opening the fridge.
Ah, she's left you some basics, I see. Including a soup made from vegetables grown in that very garden. Shall I take some out for you to heat up? You've had a long journey. You'll want to settle in.
And he was gone.